All right, I put the lid back on the toothpaste this morning. I picked up my towels. Lila, I hate you. My name is Bill Smith. I'm an alcoholic. I always say I'm sober through the grace of God. If you look up the word grace, it means unmerited gift. Because if I had to do anything good, you'd have a different speaker today. And I always do say through the fellowship, because you people welcome me when nobody else did. And it's really an honor to be come back somewhere you've spoke before, and really a privilege. And Harlan, I just love you, and it's just like home week for me. I mean, and you know something, if you're new here or early in sobriety, I don't know how you come in here, but I came in here a party of one. You know, I wasn't allowed on my brother's property, and nobody. The only person that hadn't wrote me off was my mom, and moms just don't write you off. They just don't, you know. You can't get rid of moms, you know, and I'm really, really so glad. I'm glad my sponsor came up with me. He did a great job yesterday, my story is different than a lot of people's, and I don't try to impress nobody. I'm not making a demo tape so you come and ask me to speak again. It's my experience. What I do is I do one thing really, really good, and my sponsor knows that. I do one thing really, really good in AA. I show up. All the time. I still go to 8-10 meetings a week. I still go to the prisons, the jails, the detox centers. I hang out on Skid Row because that's where I used to live, you know. And my sobriety date is 10-18 of 75. And I'm still living. I'm still on this side of the grass because of a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. I was raised right. I never seen my parents take a drink, smoke a cigarette, never heard them cuss. I was raised in Deep South. I never heard the N-word in my home, none of that. I got all that crap on the street, you know. I was raised right. I just turned left, you know. My mother used to say I got three sons and him. I was loved. I knew what Christmas was like. I knew what it smelled like. I knew what Thanksgiving was like. I was taking fishing. I was taking hunting. I was giving all the love a human being could give. And I thought North Carolina was boring. And I couldn't wait to leave North Carolina to go someplace else. So I joined the Navy to see the world and became a drunk. And it's just that simple. You know, I had a few drinks earlier in my life, and I've heard guys say, they felt the hair grow in the back of their head. None of that crap happened, you know. But I joined the Navy to see the world and became a drunk and crossed that line. And I'm one of those guys that believe it's more than a spiritual disease. And I believe that because Bill talks about it a lot, that I am vitally and mentally different than my fellows. What does that mean? To me, it means I don't think like my brothers. You know, when you line the four Smith boys up, you don't have to do no DNA. You can tell we're from the same family. You know what I mean? The only time we look different is when all four of us start drinking. One of them looks a little different. In fact, he looks a whole lot different. Because after just about one, and the one don't drink at all, the other one, and one might drink two, I doubt it. But the other one keeps going. You know what I mean? And I didn't know that was part of alcoholism. And Bill talks about, in the fourth step, he talks about once the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Not only were we spiritually sick, but we were bodily and mentally ill, which means there's something wrong with Billy's mind and there's something wrong with Billy's body. Only when you put alcohol into it, my body is different. It changes from all the Al-Anons. It doesn't act like an Al-Anon. You know what I mean? I don't know what your drug of choice is, but mine is more, you know. And I didn't know that was part of alcoholism. And I joined the Navy to see the world. I was Seaman of the Month for the Navy. There's something happened. They come out with this flu shot. It was an experimental thing, and I took it, and I worked for me, and I was able to, was out at sea, and I was a radio operator, and I worked like 20 hours a day for, I forgot how many days it was. It was quite a few days because all the rest of them got the flu and got so sick they couldn't, and they made me Seaman of the Month. I went in with little white stripes, and if any of you was in the Navy, I made second class petty officer, and I came out with little white stripes. You know what I mean? I exceed. I come out like the balloon full of helium. Then I just sort of fade, you know. And a lot of things you can do in the Navy, you just can't miss the boat. And I was in Japan, and in one of them houses, they had the two things I really liked, and I had to have a lot of this before I could go do that. And got too much of both, I guess. When I woke up, the boat was gone. The old man looked at me and took all my stripes and said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I can't wait to get back to Long Beach so I can get out of the Navy." And the day I got out of the Navy, I got locked up with the Long Beach police. Had too much of a little celebration, I guess. Called my mom and dad, said, "I'm on my way home." They lived in Florida. I hadn't seen them in quite a while. I said, "I'll be home in a few days." And 46 days later, I showed up. It's a long drive from Long Beach to St. Pete, especially when you go through Chester, Illinois, and don't ask me why. But when I mustered out, they handed me $800, and that's a lot of money to handle drunk, especially when beer's only 25 cents a thing, and you get a lot of wine for 65 cents a pint. And it just took 46 days to drive from Long Beach, California. Got a job there in Excel for about 6 months at General Electric. I remember I went and got that job, and they said they didn't have anything opening. And I said, "You got to have something. Plant this big, there's got to be something open." They said, "We only need a janitor." I said, "I'll take it." They said, "Well, you're a little overqualified for that." I said, "Not if you're broke, I'm thinking. If you're broke, you're not overqualified. I'll take it." And with no time, in less than a year, I was in a lab making starters for missiles and stuff, and I excelled there. And if you miss 5 days, they fire you. I missed 28, they wouldn't fire me, so I just quit. Went to work for a roofing company. Worked 4 hours. Went to lunch, forgot to go back. Got a pitcher of beer. I don't know how you drank, but work didn't seem important no more once I had that pitcher of beer. Worked on a fishing boat, thought I found heaven. There's all drunks. They fired me. The guys just wanted to fish and get drunk. I wanted to get fish and get drunk and tell them I run the company, and they didn't appreciate it. Went home, told my mom. I said, guy kept telling me, "You need to go to Las Vegas. You got 24-hour bars and a lot of showgirls." I said, "Boy, that ain't a bad combination there." Went and told my mom. I said, "I'm going to Las Vegas." She says, "I'll help you pack. Honey, we don't know what to do for you." You know, I'm the only kid they ever got out of jail, and that used to bother my mother. She never thought her kids belonged in jail. And I remember my dad was crippled. He's 5'1". He got me out of jail one time and brought me home, and he knew I was feeling bad. And my brothers used to get me out, but they got me out one time, and I took their car away from them, left them standing in a strange city. I can tell you the next time I called them, they didn't come. And they was missing me, and finally, I think it was David or Bobby, one of them told, "If you're looking for Billy, he's in Tampa, Florida jail." My dad come and got me out, and on the way home, he says, "You need to do a little more fishing and a little less drinking." I'm thinking, how in the hell do you fish if you don't drink? You know, I found out later after I got sober, you catch a lot more. But anyway, he got back, and he took me in the house. I'm waiting for the lecture, and I never got it. I never was put down by my parents. I was never told I was a bad kid. I was never told none of the things. I was always told the right things. Always told, "We love you." I'm thinking, why can't I be like the rest of them guys, you know? And he grabbed me, took me by the arm, and pointed to the bedroom. He said, "That will always be your bedroom. Nobody will ever be able to take that away from you," which is most supposed to make me feel better, which made me feel worse. And I'm going, "God, what the hell is wrong with me?" And I packed that stuff up. And I remember my dad grabbing me one time. He said, "Listen, when you do these things that you do, we don't know what it is, but when you disappear for 2 or 3 weeks and nobody knows where you're at, just pick up the phone, call your mom and say, 'Hey, mom, I'm okay.' And hang up. Because after 2 or 3 days, your mom goes, 'Anybody seen Billy?' Nobody knows where Billy at. Your mother worries about you." And I never knew how bad that was until I have a 38-year-old daughter that I'll probably talk about this weekend that's still out there, and she's worse than she's ever been for you people that know me. I'm trying to get her out. out of her mother's house, and her mother don't want to let me in. I got to let her. She's 38 years old. She needs to make up her mind what she wants to do. And her mother will call me. Have you heard from Debbie? And I said, no. You think she's dead? And I said, Inga, please. Well, she probably is with that crowd. She might go, what do you think's going on? And I just can feel the worry. And I know what my... And by not calling, I know the same thing that my parents went through. What a cruel way to treat people that you love, that they love you, and not to even say, pick up the phone and say, hey, Mom, I'm okay. And I meant to every time. I always meant to. It's just once I take a drink, all bets are off. You know what I mean? I don't know what's going to happen. I heard by a guy from the podium say, when he took a drink, he didn't know what was going to happen. Hell, I know exactly what's going to happen when I take a drink. I'm going to have another drink. And I'm going to have another one, and I'm going to have another one. I'm the guy on page 44. If you start to drink and you can't control it, you probably got it. And if you've ever really tried to quit and you can't quit, you probably got it. Then you're dealing with a disease, it says, that only a spiritual experience can conquer. And that's what the steps are designed to do, to give me enough power to go. They still offer it to me, and I go, no, thank you, not today. Try me tomorrow, but not today. Thank you very much. And come across Las Vegas, come across that hill and thought I'd found heaven, had a couple $100 on me and went into Fremont to figure out what I was going to do with my life, ordered a beer and woke up broke. I had one phone number and called and lived on the guy's house couch for a couple of months and he couldn't stand me no more and asked me to leave and I wound up living on the streets in Las Vegas. My brother owns his own company. The other kid is, you know, telling how much money he made. He's a big six figures and the other kid put the airports in for the government. And I'm walking him down Fremont Street with everything I owned in a carnation box, mad at you because you don't put your cigarettes out because I got no soles in my shoes. And if I had $40 in my pocket and you say, Billy, how you doing? It's not that bad. Now, if I'm broke, come here, I need to talk to you, you know. But if I had $40 in my pocket, well, where are you living? Well, I'm just in between places right now. You know, and I didn't know how bad that sounded. The one time Debbie came home and she listened to one of these tapes, and so I'm not going to say what I said the last time because she said that wasn't true. So, but anyway, she come home and she looked horrible. She weighed about 85 pounds and looked like a ghost. And she says, "Can I come in and take a shower?" And I said, "She said I haven't had a shower." And I guess on that tape she said I said 8 days, so I ain't saying that. Anyway, she hadn't had a shower for a few days, and I said, "Yeah, but you can't stay here." She said, "Dad, I know that, but I need to take a shower." And I said, "Okay, come on in." And I said, "When's the last time you eaten?" She says, "I don't remember. I watched this kid eat four times in about 5 hours." And I said, "Oh, my God." And she came out and she took a shower and she looked at me and I said, "Jesus, Debbie, there's a better life, honey. Why don't you go get some help?" She said, "Dad, we're living in the back of a pickup now and we have a mattress in there. And it's not that bad." I thought, "Oh my God, the mattress maker." She said, "Yeah, Dad, sleeping on." I said, "Oh my God. All you got to do is quit drinking and drugging and you can come in here." She lived with me four or five times. I finally just couldn't take it no more and told her that she had to leave. I'd rather stood over in the corner and let Bob hit me 15 times in the face rather than tell that kid to pack her clothes and leave. She was going to take that old yellow lab, and I said, "He ain't going." She says, "It's my dog," and she used all the F words, and I kept my cool. I said, "God, don't let me do nothing I regret." And she's walking off. I said, "The dog ain't done nothing wrong. You have, and he stays. And you can come and visit him, but you can't stand in there." And isn't that weird? The alcoholic mind just don't give you the picture. Living in the back of a pickup, it's just not that bad, you know. And came out here and hit the streets. I met a lady, tried to straighten out. She really liked old Billy. And she was my guiding light. And we're divorced 20 years. I talked to her yesterday. She's bedridden. I don't let nothing happen to her. For the first time in my life, I knew I was a drunk. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I knew I was a drunk. I didn't have a problem with it. At a job making $1 an hour, I was a shill. You sit on the game till the game just started and you move to the next game. Got a check for $41. I was trying to teach me how to do craps. And one day I went to sign in and the guy I worked for said, "Don't sign in, you don't work here no more." And I said, "Jesus Christ, you fire a guy for missing a day?" He said, "Today's Friday." When's the last time I was here? He said, Monday. I said, no, I've been gone 3 days. I said, well, would you buy a guy a drink after you fired him? He says, yeah. So I go to the bar, and I'm looking in the pit, and he's standing like this, and you could see the smoke coming out of his ears. And he come over, and he told the bartender, give this guy a quart of orange juice and a quart of tomato juice. You go home and drink that, and you sober up, and you get back. And he said, I said, Ray, you just fired me. He said, Billy, and I said, whoa, this is a mistake. So I grabbed both of them, left, and I worked for him for 2 more years. And he'd ask me things like, what are you going to do with your life? And I don't know. He said, let me teach you the gambling business. And he did. And I got the right people. And I agreed to go in the hospital. I got drunk and got married. You can do that in Vegas. More than once. Woke up married. She's sitting on the step, pointing her finger, telling me all these rules. Wasn't like that the day before, you know. And now there was all these rules, you know. And you better come home first. If you don't, you better sleep with one eye open. And, you know, and God, what did I just do? And it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me, that lady. I agreed to go into the hospital and dry out. I don't know if they had detox centers in or not. I agreed to go in the hospital and dry out. And I went to Santa Barbara, California, went in the hospital. And the guy sitting on the side of my bed, the same color hair as mine, telling me that I wasn't going to live any longer, that my life was over. I just gotten married. I'd been married about 2 months. And my liver and everything was shutting down. I'm the kind of guy that once I start drinking, I don't eat. And got out of that hospital, and I don't know how many days I was in there, so I'm not going to tell you, because I don't know. I was in there quite a while, and I come back, and I come in, told Inga, I said, if you take one drink, I'm leaving. And she said, what's all that about? And I told her what the doctor said, and so we agreed to stay sober, except I didn't. I got drunk, and I went a lot of money. I took my paycheck, and I went, it's in the 60s, I went almost $20,000, and pitched me in the hands of people that owned the casino, took it off of me because I was drunk. So I figured I didn't need a wife and $20,000. You know, you don't need both. You know, if you got $20,000, you don't need a wife. When I met Inga, I didn't have a car, an apartment, or nothing. She had a car, an apartment, and, you know, I needed her. You know, I got $20,000 now, and I give away a bunch of it, and I still had like $14,000 left. And God says, I got to keep you here. So she got real sick, and I'm not a bad person. So I stayed there and took care of her. I had to bathe her and everything. And I found out I married a really, really, really neat lady. And she said, this is not going to work with you drinking like this. And I said, all right. So I called my dad and told him we was coming to Florida and I was going to get a car, and we wound up buying a house. And she still lives in it. And I made up my mind I'd never drink again. And if you would have come to me, I'm a gambling man anyway, I'd have bet you $50 million against $5 I would have never drank again. I'm the kind of guy, I keep coming, you know what I mean? I can do things when I make up my mind to do it. And the book talks about that we're really successful in other areas. We're successful in all that, except when it comes to alcohol. If you're alcoholic, you can't even have a glass of beer. I told God this morning, please don't let me drink. I hear people say alcohol's not their problem. Well, it's mine. Book tells me I can't even have a glass of beer. Sound like a problem. It says, remember, we deal with alcohol. It doesn't say I deal with my feelings. It says I deal with alcohol. Without help, it's too much for me. So I asked for help this morning. My sponsor said for me to beg him. So I beg him. I say, please, you know, don't let me drink, you know. And I went 7 or 8 years, 6, I don't know. My story's, you know, if I knew all that stuff was going to be so important, I would have paid more attention back in, but... Playing golf, I'm playing the best golf of my life. I'm playing in a tournament, and I'm in third place, and I know I'm going to win this tournament. And it was $4,000. It wasn't a lot of money now, but there's a lot of money back in, and already had that money in my pocket. I'm not a Tiger Woods, but I was crushing that golf ball. And I'm playing with Mickey's two brothers, Mickey Mantle's two brothers, and Roy Away, one of them, I don't know what hole it was, and offered me a drink. Said, here, why don't you have a beer? And I said, why not? The thing about the alcoholism is 20 seconds before that, I'm not even thinking about drinking. You hear these people talk about, oh, I can't stand the way they feel. Maybe that's the way they are. I'm not like that. My life would be going good. And if you read the stories in the big book, even Jim, the car salesman, he was irritable and all that. But it tells you real plain, still no thought of drinking. I will not get a warning. I just won't. It's just a... I'd be there and butler comes up and says, have a drink. Okay. You know, and then, I 3 days later, I'm going, what the hell happened? You know, you had one drink. And I didn't get drunk that day and I didn't go to the jail. My neighbor said, I hear you had a beer at the golf course. Why don't you come on over? And I said, I'll be right over. Within 2 weeks, I'm falling down drunk. And 14 months later, I did something I never thought I'd do. I took a gun and tried to commit suicide. And I started thinking suicide on a daily basis. I stand in my front yard and thinking, you know, for the first time in my life, I didn't know I was an alcoholic, but I knew I was a bad son, a bad father, a bad man. And I hated being a bad person because I wasn't raised bad. I just hated it. My good friend Don Pitts, I just loved him, and he's not with us no longer, and I just loved him. And all he said was, he was standing in his front yard, and he was trying to take his own life, and he had a mind that won't work and a body that won't die. And that's a horrible place to be. There is no light at the end of that tunnel. It's just nothing. It's just like, God, here I've had a miserable life on earth. Now I got to die and go to spend the rest of eternity on hell. Because I know guys like me don't go to the other place. And what a bad deal this was. And in less than 2 weeks, this pretty lady I'm telling you about told me she was taking me to a dance. 1975 Las Vegas Roundup. Now, she might have said AA dance. I didn't hear AA. I just heard dance. This pretty cocktail waitress, and she was a gorgeous lady, had sort of locked me out of the bedroom. I'm thinking if I go to this dance, take a shower, put a little smelly stuff on, dance with her a couple times, I might have a few seconds of fun after this dance. And I went and it was an AA meeting. And it was a dance, but the dance was the next night. And AA worked. Because when I got home, she was all over me. I thought, dog, this AA ain't that bad. Try this for a few days, you know. And I went all weekend, and I wouldn't even listen. I was there because of her. And ain't that weird? I can still tell you who the speakers was and what they said. And I wasn't even listening. Right? I'm just with her. And it was Father Hillary, you know, and Nancy Stewart, and Tom O'Sullivan. I remember Tom saying he got up one morning and he was a town dentist and became the town drunk. And he got up one morning and had to watch his mother die. And he said he really felt bad because he couldn't feel nothing. If she'd have waited that night when he was half drunk, he could have went through all the motions. But he had to stand there going through the emotions of trying to feel something for his own mother. And my wife punched me and she says, you're like that all the time. And I thought, my God, that's true. And Father Hillary said the darndest thing I ever heard. And I was sitting there with a guy, and he goes, we don't care how the mule got in the ditch, let's just get him out. I said, what the heck does that mean? He said, we don't care why you're alcoholic, let's just do something about it. I said, well, I'm not alcoholic. I mean, I drink a lot, and I'm not alcoholic. And on Sunday morning, they have the countdown, and my wife was sitting there. And this is the funniest story you ever heard. Sitting there and she's punching me. You gonna get the book. Boom, you gonna get the book. I said, they ain't giving me no book. I can promise you that. And she, boom, you gonna get the book. And they can take that book and put it where they want to. I don't care what they do with that book. They ain't giving it to me. 15 years later, I'm sitting at the same conference. They have a countdown. And there's a lady there punching this guy. You gonna get the book, he said. I told the guy, that's not one of the requirements. You don't have to worry about the book. 15 years later, I told him, oh, my God, I introduced myself to him. I went to work the next couple of days, and I come home one night and told Inga, as soon as you fix dinner, I'm going to an AA meeting. If you're new here, this is what has to happen. This is the way I believe. Doesn't make it true. It became my idea to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. People have been telling me for years, you need to go get some help. People who really loved me told me, became my idea. And what happened was that weekend, and it's what I hope happens in here this morning. I didn't even know it, but you guys turned my light on. It wasn't very bright, but you lit the pilot light. And once you lit it, then I got to do whatever I can to keep that light on. And the only thing I was able to do was go to meetings. And I'd raise my hand, I said, my name is Bill. And then after, you know, I'm going to 2 or 3 meetings a day, and after a while they stare, because you're supposed to say something else. I'm thinking, come on outside, we'll talk about it, buddy, you know. Guy says, you need to work the steps. I said, come out here, I'll knock you off of these, you know. My favorite thing is go over in the corner and practice falling down, because I'm going to knock you down several times, you know. And I'm sitting in the back of the room, I guess in case of fire, I don't know, and with my arms locked in the pistol position, you know. I went from suicide to homicide in about 4 days. I didn't want to hurt me no more. I wanted to kill every sucker I seen, you know. And I just kept going, and right before my 30 days was up, I raised my hand and said, my name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. And I could have said, I'm a brain surgeon, also an architect, all that stuff. Didn't mean nothing to me. That's what you want to hear. I'm a street kid. I'll tell you. Thank God I said it. And so I kept going. I got my year in. No sponsor, no steps, locked in the pistol position. Couldn't find a key. Go to this Alana Club where I go to 97,000 times a day, it seems like. And nobody says happy birthday. I didn't tell them I had a year, but I thought they ought to know. They blow them little cakes in for them other guys, them little cupcakes with a candle. I didn't get nothing. You know, now I'm mad they don't come up and congratulate me. I remember I was sitting in this, went to the Thai Club one time, and that's where Dick T and all them businessmen was. They had the purple shirts with blue pants and yellow shoes. I said, I ain't never coming back in here. And I do that now, but I go back to the Lana Club where all the street people live. And there was a guy there named Gary, and he was like this. I knew he had no chance. He was way too weird to stay sober. Then there was a lady there named Jackie, and she was half black and half white. And I wouldn't have followed her with a ball bat. I had never seen nobody that mean. I said, Jackie, nobody that mean can stay sober, you know. Wow. Then there was another lady there, really dressed nice, and after 3 or 4 months, she was chairing meetings, and after 7 months, she did the 4-step, and I thought, Smith, you're too stupid to even do this. You can't even do Alcoholics Anonymous. Look at this girl, you know. But I went to a lot of meetings, and I kept showing up, and one day, they asked for newcomers, and Lori held her hand up. So 4 months later, I had a year and asked for newcomers, and Lori held her hand up. Jackie got a year, and Gary got a year. I ain't never been right, you know what I mean? And I said, well, maybe this ain't about looking good. Maybe this is just about showing up and doing the very best you can. What your best might not be, it's definitely not my best. I'm telling you, the only thing I do good is I just show up, and I show up a lot. And I come out of the Triangle Club one day, and I knew I was going to get drunk. I knew I'd never going to get home that day. I don't know how many months I was sober. And I turned around, and once again, this loving God in my life had the right person. I turned around, and I said, Ted Davis. And I said, Ted, will you please be my sponsor? And before he could say anything, because I hate rejection, I said, I'll do anything you tell me. And he said, Billy, it will be an honor. Be over at my house today at 1:30. I said, well, I didn't mean today, you know. He said, Billy, I said, okay, I'll be there at 1:30, you know. So I went and told him one time, I said, I need to do a 4-step. He said, Billy, what I want you to do is get up and ask God to keep you sober. Don't kill yourself or don't kill nobody else. Just go and pick him up. He don't have a car, and take him to a meeting and, you know, help set up chairs, clean the pool, do this. And so that's what I did. And went to retreat. I tried to do a 4-step and I couldn't. I went to retreat and I met Father Don Lynch, and he turned my whole life around. And I was sitting there doing the 5th step with my sponsor, and about halfway through this thing, I stopped and I said, I can't believe I'm doing this, all this garbage. And I told him some things that I'm not telling from the podium. And I said, I can't believe I'm doing this. And he said, don't you understand why? I said, no, I really don't. He said, Billy, you trust me. And I thought, that's right, I do trust you. See, if you're new here, this is what it is. There's a guy in my case, I was 15 when I took my first drink, and I was 40 when I got sober. I've been as a guy in a hole, and he's been in the hole in my case 25 years. And there's a doctor comes by, and I yell up to the doctor, and I said, listen, doc, I've been in this hole for 25 years. Can you please help me? And the doctor writes some prescription, drops him into the hole, and he leaves. And I stay in the hole. Pretty soon a priest come by, and I yell up to the priest, and I said, listen, I've been in this hole for 25 years, in this black hole. Could you please help me get out of this hole? And the priest writes some prayers and drop them into the hole. Pretty soon my sponsor comes skipping along, right? And I yell up to him, I said, listen, I've been in this hole for 25 years. Could you please help me get out of this hole? And my sponsor jumped down in the hole. I said, now, boy, you're the stupidest guy I ever met. Now we both stuck in this hole. He says, no, we're not. I've been in this hole before, and I know the way out. And see, that's all it is. It ain't that we're some kind of genius or something. You know what I'm saying? It's just what we've done the process, and if you've done the process, then you can take the next guy. I was telling Wayne this morning, I don't know how many new guys I got, and I take them one at a time through the book, and I am so busy. And Roger told me like 6 or 8 months ago, because of this daughter and all the thing, my brother's got leukemia and all these things that's going on. He said, you need to stay busy. I wish he hadn't said that, because God must have heard him. I ain't had time to take a nap, you know what I mean? And what it does is, when all this stuff starts coming down, you guys' picture come in my head, and it makes it all right. And so I was able to do the fifth step, and I was, you know what I want to talk about for the rest of the thing is, has to do mostly with the third step. My favorite step of that, I know everybody says 12 and 3 and all that, but my favorite step is really, they're all my favorite, but 10 is my favorite, really, 10 and 11, because 10 keeps me zeroed in, because I don't have to, you know, I do spot check inventories. The other day I did something, I just went right in. I said, listen, I owe you an apology. I need to clean this up right now. You know, I do the side, then I do a 10 step every night. And I heard Leah talk about it last night, and it really rang a bell with me, because I'm sober 31 years, and just the last 2 years, my life has changed so much. It just really took a turn. And what happens is, I believe that you have to stay here long enough to turn the corner. You're just a mimic. You know, he does that, so I do this. And then pretty soon, it goes from here to here. And if you're a redneck, it takes a long time to go from here to here. I mean, a long time. It's a long trip, because it goes through the woods and by the rivers. And it just takes a long time. And finally, if you just keep doing it one day. And when I went through the second divorce, I remember my sponsor telling me to give my ex-wife everything and get on with my life. And I said, Ted, I'm entitled to something. The house is paid for and all that. And we had two cars. One of them you could hear 3 miles before you seen it. And it was a new one. He said, give her that. Give her everything. Give her the bank accounts and get on with your life. And we had a little piece of property way out. She had to praise it. Praised it nothing. So you get that. I take everything else. And I was a very, very angry man. And my sponsor looked at me. And this is what I want to talk about for the rest of the morning. He says, you don't trust God. I said, sure I do. I was 10 years sober. I said, sure I do. I know he's going to. He said, no, you have faith in God, but you don't trust him. And there's a big difference. We have a circus, sorry, it's an act where they do the circus acts. There's a guy that pushes a wheelbarrow across the cable, pushes this wheelbarrow, and he does it night after night. I have faith that he can push that wheelbarrow across that cable. Ted said, if you trust him, you'll get in the wheelbarrow. And that's what I had to do. I had to get in a wheelbarrow and let God grow my life. And over the past, one time I was going to do a sponsorship work. And what this is about is, I can look back over my life now, over the last 31 years, and see where anything came up in my life. There's always been the right person or the right thing. It might have not been when I wanted it, but it's always showed up. I can look back and see where things that just happened that's just impossible to happen. It just does. And it doesn't make sense, but it has. I can look back at all the time when Ted was there, when I went into that bar that time and to get a pack of cigarettes and order a drink. It's the only bartender in town. You guys in AA. He said, Billy, I thought you was off this crap. And I started thinking. I shaking. I said, I'm on my way to an AA meeting. And this guy said, I said, how could I do that? He said, what did you always order when you went in there first? You never ordered cigarettes, Smith. I said, oh. He said, you got an alcoholic mind. You sick. You really need to stay here, right? And so I can look back and see where all the things has happened. And with Debbie, you know, I was going to do a sponsor workshop, and it was on October the 1st. And I'm a hunter and fisherman, so if it's... If you're an animal activist, you can cut this part out of the tape. Because if it runs, I shoot at it, and if it swims, I try to catch it. You know, and I told them, I said, I don't do stuff on October the 1st. I got deer tags. I'm going hunting. They said, okay, we'll get somebody else. And I said, no, if I made a commitment to do that, I'll do it. And I went in that workshop, me and another guy, and I really, really enjoyed it. It turned out 10 times better than I thought, and I just felt really good inside. And when I got all done, Valerie come up to me and said, don't forget, Dick's 35th birthday is tomorrow, and we want you to chair the meeting. And I said, why can't he have his birthday some other time? You know, I want to go hunting, you know. And I said, okay, I'll wait one more day, and I went and did that, and it was really nice, and I'm glad I did. And get ready to leave, and here come one of these guys I sponsor, and he says he's in really bad shape, and he used the magic word. He talked about suicide, and I said, okay, be over at my house in the morning. And I thought, God, I ain't gonna never get hunting. It was a lot sicker than I thought, and I spent all morning with him, and went down to the little place I knew and got some quail that afternoon. I come back and went to bed at 5 o'clock so I could get up and get out of there and go hunting. Had my truck loaded, and about 10 o'clock my phone rang, and it was my daughter. Whole side of her face was caved in. See, if I'd have had my way, right, I'd have left on Saturday. If I'd have had my way, I'd have left on Sunday. And God says, I got to hold you here. I got something coming up. Isn't that amazing? Now, you don't have to think like that, but it's very important that I think like that, that God's watching over all the people I love and watching over you. I really need to believe he's in my life, that he's got this white right around me, that he loves me, because I had a hard time with that. I didn't think nobody loved people like me. You told me that just to make me feel good. You didn't really mean it, you know. And I got her into the ABC Recovery Center, and she drank in detox. Guy said, she actually drank in detox? I said, what's wrong with that? That's what alcoholics do. They drink. I had to go speak in San Diego and went by, and she's standing on the side of the road with two big bags of clothes. And she said, what am I going to do? I said, I don't know, but you can't get into the truck. She's crying, I'm crying. I got to go down and tell you guys how great AA is. And here I'm leaving my driving off and leaving my daughter. And hardest thing I ever done, I had to drive off and leave her. And it's just been it's an ongoing thing like that. But I just kept putting one foot in front of the other, you know. And when I was... when I was about between that 10 and 15 years when I got that second divorce, Ted told me, he says, give her everything, get on with your life. And he called me over to his house one day, and he says, you know, this thing's killing you. This resentment's killing you. You need to go over and knock on her door. And what happened was I drove by her house, and the lawn was up like this, and the fence was down. It just looked like crap. You know what I mean? And I went, yes. You know, and I went, but I got a big mouth, and I went and told him. And he said, what I want you to do is I want you to go over and fix that place up. I said, whoa, Ted, wait a minute. He said, listen, Billy, this thing is killing you. This thing is killing you. And he said it to me once or twice before. You're going to get drunk. What does the book say? Number one thing, resentment. We drink, then we die. Be nice if it's a door three, right? We find her. Drink and die. So I went over, knocked on her door, said, can I please do this? And he said, when you fix everything up, don't ask no money for her. Take it out of your own pocket. And I started doing that over 20 years ago, and I still do it. Still mow the yard, take care of the pool and everything. And, over the years, I've been able to do this, and what has happened with the speaking thing is I've got a network of friends around the country. I've made some people that actually think I'm okay, and that's really important. Most of the time, my skin fits. A lot of times, it don't. You know, and I tell you something, that with this thing going on with my ex, she's completely thing, and my daughter, I wouldn't wish this on nobody, because I love them people say, just let go and let God. I just love that. Yeah, you too. My daughter's on my mind constantly. And when I talk at these conferences, I had a lady come up and told me, said, young girl, she said, you need to turn her loose and give her a chance so she can come here, so she can go make amends to you like I made to my dad. And I know that. But it's hard for me when I know she's hungry and she needs cigarettes It's hard for me. I'm all, you know, the truth of it is, Inga say, go get me a carton of cigarettes and get Debbie one. And I always, you know, and I know I'm not supposed to, but I'm actually glad that she says, get Debbie one. Because then, you see, it's not my idea. Isn't that stupid? If you got kids, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, you don't. And so I just struggle with this thing all the time. And then the last 2 years have just been, I retired in 2000. I left the Riviera and I was 48 years old. I was considered really good at what I did in the gambling business. I wound up retiring a pit boss at Caesars, and I left the Riviera. And they wanted me to stay, and I told them if they pay me, I would. The worst paying hotel in the city, and they knew it. And they gave me a piece of paper that I still have somewhere in the house. And what it said on that piece of paper was, says, good for rehire. I'd never had one. I was 48 years old. I give the Sahara 2 weeks' notice. You know what they told me? You can leave right now. We don't need 2 more weeks of you. I was employee of the month at the Sahara. Later on, they fired me. You know, when I left the Caesars, they told me that if I didn't like retirement, give them 1 day notice and put me back to work. You know, over the last couple of years, my brother has his youngest daughter just got married 2 weeks ago. I was in North Carolina at the wedding. They introduced me as the brother that they tried to hide. They sent me an airline ticket, and I said, I got money to pay my own airline ticket. And they said, we know, but we want to do it. I had to learn that in AA. I remember I was helping Catfish John. When I first got sober, he grabbed me because he knew I was so fragile. He grabbed me every day I had off. He grabbed me. Come over to the house, and we'd fix the fence, and we'd clean the boat, and we'd do that. He always had me doing something. And, you know, you can't get around them guys like that. They talk AA all day long. They drive you nuts. And I went fishing with him one night. And, you know, I told him, I said, if you don't shut up, I'm going to use you for an anchor. You know, Jesus Christ, you're driving me nuts. You know, you can do this. And, you know, and one day he says, you coming over this weekend? I said, I can't. Inga wants to help me paint. Inga wants me to do some painting around the house. And that's what Catfish John did. He was a professional painter. He says, oh, great. I'll come over and help you. And I said, that's okay, John. I'll do it myself. And he screamed at me. And John's not like that. I said, oh, my God, John, chill out. And he says, don't you feel good when you help me? Don't you feel good when you help me? I said, sure. He said, then give me a chance to feel good. Do you know that's still hard for me? 31 years sober. I'll help you, but that's okay. I'll do it myself. You deprive a human being of feeling good, and that's what it's about. This thing is not about Billy Smith. This thing is about other people. Constant thought of others. I see how some people treat people on the streets, and I know they say they were homeless. They wasn't there very long. I guarantee you they were sleeping on somebody's couch, and they call that homeless. You know, and that's not homeless. When you're walking up down the street with everything you own. And I remember what it's like, you know. And I remember begging a lady one time. And she was a cocktail waitress. And you knew I needed a drink. I was shaking so bad. And I begged her and I told her. I said, you ain't going to make no money because I'm going to stand right in the middle of your station, you know. And she finally gave me $2 and called me every kind of name in the world. And I left. And I remember that. And what it's like to be like that, you know. And one time there was a guy, there's a lady I always looked for, and I couldn't find her. And I was driving through this area where she stays, and I looked way back in the corner, and there sat a guy with his cart. And so I took $3. For the newcomers, I give them $3. For my regulars, I give them $5 and $10. But my newcomer, he was a new one, I didn't know him, so held it out the window, and I said, come here, maybe I can help you today. And when he got up and started walking toward me, he walked like this. He could barely, maybe early 40s, but he couldn't hardly move. And I thought, oh, my God, alcoholic sickness, just shaking like a thing, you know. And when I handed him the $3, he grabbed me by the arm. And he says, you'll never know. I said, try me, I might. He says, you won't understand. I said, I might. I lived on the street, try me. He said, this is like $1 million to me. I said, that's right. This is not like 500 or 1,000. You don't have any. This is like $1 million. And I watched him go back. You know what happens when I do that? Inside where I live, I feel really good. Because I tell you something. Debbie told me one time something that blew my mind. She says, you'll never know how lucky I am. She says, things just always happen to me right when I need it. And that's all I ask God to do, just take care of her. Let me take care of your kids and you take care of mine. Ted says, I can help your kids, but I can't help my own. That doesn't seem fair, right? And so all these things going on with my brother with leukemia, and we went back to the wedding, and my brother kept praying, said, let's pray that he makes this wedding. And he did. And we had a great time. There's over 100 people there. She's an attorney, married an attorney. And Debbie was smarter than all of them. And Debbie made straight A's without even trying. After I retired, I had some money, so I invested it in a mortgage company, which sent me a check every month. And that's what I give away, and that's what I help Inga with, and that's what I live on. Last year, they stole $970 million. And over 100,000 of it was mine. And I went broke. For the first time, not really broke, but it hurt. For the first time, I really didn't get mad at God. I didn't panic. I said, okay. You put it in there to get that extra percent. This is part of the gamble. I thought, wow. So I called Inga and told her, I said, you know, you're going to have to tighten it up a little bit. Got to tighten it up a little bit because I don't have the income like I had. Not only did I lost my income, I lost my principal. So I had some more and I got that. And this is how I believe. 30 years ago, when I married Inga, Inga picked this house out. I'm 5131 Dalton. She still lives in it. And we moved in there. I didn't pick the house out. She did. After I retired, me and some guys, we bought some properties. We went in business. And we made a little money, but not much on the properties because we sold them too soon. And I did that myself. And 30 years ago when you moved there, there was a guy come over. Lived a few doors down from me that had to go to prison. He was about 6'4". He had a hand like that. I didn't like him. I didn't like his wife either. But he had two girls the same age as Debbie, and I liked both of those. He said, I got to go to prison for a while, and I need some money. I said, Mike, I ain't giving you nothing. He says, give me $3,000, and I'll give you a piece of property. I'll sign it over to you. And when I get out of jail, I'll come and bring you the money. Give me my property back. I said, okay, here's the deal. I'll give you $3,000. Once you get out of prison, I'll give you a year and a half to come and give me $3,300. $3,000 and $3,300 interest. Over 3 or 4 years, that ain't bad. But you're not my friend. It's a business deal. He says, okay. So he signed the property over. 8 years later, he comes knocking on my door. I'm getting a divorce. She's getting everything. I'm getting this piece of nothing. She had it appraised, praised at nothing. You get that. He got my door, said, I want my property back. I said, not a chance. Get out of here. He says, okay. What was the end of that? I didn't even know where the property was. But I knew I owned it because I paid taxes on it every year. I paid taxes on it for 28 years. Never seen it. One guy said, let's go find it. We did, but we didn't find it. I didn't know it. I said, it's out here somewhere. Because they send me a tax bill and I pay it. So I do own something out here somewhere. So, 3 or 4 months ago, I called this friend of mine that I sponsor. He's one of the best real estate agents I've ever seen because he gives away more than he should. He's my kind of guy. I told him I need to put this up for sale. He said, where's it at? I said, I don't know. He said, let's go see if we can find it. I said, okay. I said, you're a real estate agent. That's your job. That's what I'm paying you for. We went out and found it. Had 1 acre. To the left of me was a house. I don't know what it cost. Way over $1 million. To the back of me was another one. Ooh, bigger than that one. Over here was a huge one. I said, wow. Anyway, make a long story short, I sold it. It closed last month. for when it gets all done with the interest and everything, it'd be almost $500,000. $3,000. But that ain't it. No, listen, and I ain't gonna loan you no money after the meeting. That ain't it. What I want to do is, what I'm going to tell you is, to learn to trust God. It has nothing to do with the money. But God takes care of everything. I can't have a God that just takes care of you and not me, and can't have that kind of God. I got to have a God that takes care of me. My health, everything comes down. It's just the way. Life does not always hand you the things that you want. You know, God, I'd give anything. I'd give everything I had to get rid of my brother's leukemia. My God. You know, the kid that sold my land, he said, you'd take all this money and just hand it to Debbie. Hand it to anybody if Debbie got sober. I said, in a second. I said, I got that old dog. He's 12 and a half. He ain't got much time. You bring $1 million and throw it down there and say, give me the dog, I hit you right in the mouth. You know what I mean? But what I had to understand was, and I got my first check the 5th, so I called Inga and told her, we back in action. You know, I get my $1,800 a month come in, plus my Social Security, so now I can go back and do all the things that I do. But what happens, this is the way I believe. You can believe any way you want to, but I have to believe like this, that God looks after me no matter what I do. See, he said 30 years ago, I got to send a guy over to your house. Because 30 years from now, you're going to be in trouble. And I'm going to have your little ace in a hole. And everybody else is going to sell theirs, and you're going to keep yours. And everybody kept trying to buy it. And I said, no, that's my ace in a hole. I need to have an ace in a hole. See, the people that I sponsor, and that's just the way I believe. And God said, you know, and it turned out fantastic. And the way the whole thing came down. And I've had so many things, and I look back over my life. It's just been at the right time, at the right moment. And I go, oh, my God. You know, Lenny was with me in May, and we was on the freeway, and a little old lady turned a little old bit. One of them cars about that long right in front of that big truck of mine, and I almost wrecked that truck, right? And I blowed my horn at her, and he says, what are you doing? I said, she almost wrecked me, that old broad. Didn't you see that? He said, Billy, God bless her. I said, God bless her? He said, yes, that's what I do. God bless her. Ever since then, when you cut in front of me, I just go, God bless you. Right? I hope I always try to grow spiritually, which means that I'm trying to be more honest, more sincere, more tolerant, more loving, more giving, and service and love. You know, this old yellow dog I got, he's really getting old. But I have to lift him in the truck now most of the time. And I was in the, I take him out to the desert, not much as I used to, but we had to have one place we used to go out. And I took him into the vet, and he had a bad heart. And the one vet said, don't let him do nothing. And I took him back to Paula, and I said, Paula. And she checked him. She said, he does have a bad heart, but don't stop this dog from living. Let this dog run. Let this dog do what he wants to. Let this dog have a life. And I said, you, my girl. So I took him out to the desert, and the wind was blowing really, really hard. And somehow he got away from me. And I climbed up on this mountain, and I looked out across this desert, and no dog nowhere. And I thought, oh, my God, he had a heart attack. And I'm not going to leave him out here in this stupid desert for these coyotes to get in. And I started crying. I said, God, you got to help me find this stupid animal. You know, please, God, don't leave him out here. I don't want to leave this dog. It's not even a minute. Here come a guy riding a bicycle in the middle of the desert down the path. I don't know how your God works, but mine's pretty quick. So I start screaming and yelling, hey, 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 hey. And finally he goes, what? I said, hold on, I don't want nothing. I said, I got a yellow lab out here someplace in the desert, but I can't find him. Have you seen one? He says, no, but there's one in the parking lot with no tail sitting beside a white truck. I said, holy crap, that's him, you know. So I go running back to the parking lot, and there he's sitting beside the truck. He just lost me too and just doubled back. So I went and told my friend Craig, I said, can you believe how God takes care of me? Boy, he just, like that quick, he said, that ain't what happened. I said, Craig, wait a minute. I ain't making no story up. I'm telling you the truth. He said, yeah, but you got the God thing mixed up. I said, what are you talking about? I got the God thing mixed up. I said, I asked God to help me. Guy come to the bicycle. He said, yeah, but you got it all wrong. I said, okay, Craig, how was it? He says, buddy's back in the truck going, listen, God, I got this dumb redneck out in the desert. Will you please send somebody out there and get it? You know? Not important that you believe like that, but you, it's important that I believe like that. It's important that I believe that God puts the right people in my life at the right time. It's important I believe that if I put this process in my life, and which I try to do every day, the fourth and fifth, and you know, and this six and seven is what makes a difference. You know, to me it does. You know, after 15 years, I was still prejudiced, and it bothered me. It didn't bother me one time, but I knew I was. Not that I went around and called people names and stuff, but inside I'd had these thoughts and I didn't want to have them no more, and I asked God to remove them. And he's not as quick as I like him to be. And I go to this detox center, and where I go, most of them is like 40% white and the other 60% is black and Hispanic and all this. And I said, if I keep thinking like it, I can't help God's kids. And I kept praying to God to do that, and then one day, I went to this detox. I said, please call before you leave. If you leave and you hit the street, you got no chance. I always tell them, here's my card. Call me before you leave. And I get a call. Guy says, you said call before you leave, so I'm calling. I said, okay, what's your name? He said, Jerome Jackson. I said, okay, Jerome, what do you look like? He says, well, I'm black. I said, Jerome, I can tell that on the phone, for Christ's sake. I said, listen, I got a better idea. I live about 20 minutes from that detox. Be standing out front, and I'll come down and pick you up. Went down and picked him up. He had a little pencil mustache and got in my truck. And I said, where are you from? He said, I'm out of the hood in Chicago. I said, what do you do for a living? He says, I've never had a job. I said, well, you had to work at Burger King or do something. He said, Billy, I've never had a W-2 form in my life. I said, how old are you? He says, 44. I said, Jesus, what did you do? He said, Billy, I'm out of the hood. I said, Jerome, the only hood I know anything about is the one on my truck. I don't know nothing about no hood. I said, what are you talking about? He said, drugs and girls. I said, how many times you been in prison? He said, three. I said, okay, it's adding up. Yeah, okay. I said, when's the last time you listened to shit-kicking music? He says, I never have. I said, today's your first day, son. He said, what's this all about? I said, listen to me real close. Just maybe with God's help, we can fill up this big hole you got in your gut, and you can help me fill up this big hole in my gut. That was over 9 years ago. Let me tell you what this guy, he got a job cleaning the bathrooms. Let me tell you what he does today. He's a shift boss. And a Las Vegas hotel runs everything. His sister's a lawyer. We got his record sealed, and he helps more people than, calls me old. And when they first sponsor them, they can do anything they want to. I don't run them off. They can call early and all that. And every time he'd call me on the phone, he'd go, look out. And I thought, hey, hang up. And he did that for like a year. One day he goes, look out. I said, Jerome, wait a minute. Hold on, man. Why can't you say goodbye like everybody else? What's this look out? He said, you know, look out for yourself. Look out for God's kids. I said, oh, look out. Right? I really believe if you want to remove a character defect, you ask this loving God, he will put the right people in your life to do it. And I think if I don't grow spiritually, there was a guy up here in Oregon told me, if I'm the same guy 5 years from now, I'll drink. And I believe that. So I try hard every day. I ask God this morning, let me be a better person than I was yesterday. I don't know how. And some days I'm good and some days I'm not. Some days I still have thoughts I hate. And if God judges me on my thinking, I'm in a lot of trouble. But if he judges me on my action, I might be judged big enough to keep. I don't want to be a trophy, just big enough to keep. I always end my pitch the same way. This is the honor of my father. When I was real young, my father told me this story. He said they have a race in North Carolina, and it's like 13, 15 kids. And every year, this is like the biggest thing in this city. And all these kids, and whoever wins the race is like the champion for the year. It's just a big thing. And all the fathers are in a winning circle except one father. There was one father back in the barn. And the guy in the barn said to him, always said to him, why aren't you out in the winning circle with all the rest of the fathers? And the guy looked at the man in the barn and he says, listen to me. If my son wins this race, nah, he won't need me. But if he loses, I want to be here for him. And I'm so glad that you were here for me because I was a loser. So come with us, join us, get a sponsor, put this process in your life, and watch your family and friends go stand in the winning circle. Thank you very much.